You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia. We strive to provide perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media. If you'd like to know more about us, check out our website at cjsf.ca.
The Netherlands. This is the Green Planet Monitor, voices and stories from a warm, wet planet. Today, European governments try to stop a Palestinian surgeon from talking about Israeli ultra-violence and fail.
They're using what's called a Hellfire Ninja missile, which is a missile that fragments immediately into discs, metal discs that explode horizontally at the surface, quadcopter, and these are the small drones with a sniper gun to shoot at people trying to get into the hospital from outside.
The Germans are the worst.
There's smear campaigns, which are a huge thing in Germany, where that gets picked up by the press and that creates a storm, and then also politicians, police arrest you for something, for having said, for example, from the river to the sea, or stop the genocide, or you get charged with incitement to hatred and then you have to go to court.
So, what is it about Israel that Western powers love so much? Not what you'd think.
We have this whole narrative, we all know the slogan, Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East. And what that really means is that it's the last remaining Western colony in the Middle East. So in that sense, an ideologically motivated attack on Israel is an attack on Western imperialism. In the case of Germany, it's not about Auschwitz, it's about NATO.
This is the Green Planet Monitor. I'm David Kattenberg. Help us deliver this weekly package of Earth news. Subscribe at greenplanetmonitor.net. Israel's war on Gaza is now into its eighth month. As Israel wages war on Palestinians in Gaza and the occupied, effectively annexed West Bank, Western governments wage war on their own citizens who condemn Israeli crimes, on students, faculty, and off-campus anti-war protesters, many of them Jewish. Social media bursts with images of protesters, young and old, on the ground, beaten, tasered, handcuffed, and dragged away. Much more tranquilly, on May 13th, prominent Jewish Israeli historian Ilan Pappe was interrogated for over 2 hours by FBI agents at Detroit Metro Airport. Pappe is a history professor at the University of Exeter in the UK and the author of the groundbreaking 2006 work, The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine. Did he support Hamas? FBI agents asked Pappe in that little room. Was Israel's war on Gaza genocidal? Did Pappe have Arab and Muslim friends in the Detroit area? Most vexingly, what is the solution to the conflict? Border cops asked the venerable Jewish historian. After a lengthy exchange with someone on the phone, Pappe thinks they were Israeli, airport coppers returned his phone and waved him on. British-Palestinian surgeon Hassan Abu Sita didn't fare so well. Last April 12th, at Berlin Airport, heading to a big Palestine conference, Abu Sita was detained, questioned for hours, then put back on a plane to London. Abu Sita is the rector of the University of Glasgow and an expert in plastic and reconstructive surgery. No one knows more about the bloody carnage Israel's war has inflicted, especially on little kids, than Hassan Abu Sita, not something German authorities wanted him to talk about. Hours after denying him entry, dozens of German police broke up the conference he was going to attend. The Palestine Congress had barely convened. Heavily armed German cops cut off power and a live feed and emptied out the crowded hall. One of the organizers, a Jewish activist, was reportedly arrested. This story grows. 3 weeks later, on May 4th, Hassan Abu Sita was halted in his tracks at a Paris airport. scheduled to address a symposium at the French Senate. The French Senate. French authorities told him to go away. Why? A Schengen ban had been slapped on him, originally designed to stop football hooligans from traveling match to match inside Europe's border-free Schengen zone. A Schengen fatwa had just been slapped on the Israel critic by Germany. Schengen bans being what they are, the Dutch followed suit, blocking Abu Sita from attending a May 17th session of the Netherlands Rights Forum in Amsterdam. Abu Sita had also planned to meet two Dutch MPs and present details about Israel's use of white phosphorus to a chemical weapons monitoring organization. Abu Sita had also planned to meet two Dutch MPs and present details about Israel's use of white phosphorus to a chemical weapons monitoring organization. Germany's fatwa against the eminent surgeon has just been lifted, though not in time to attend that rights forum gathering. Instead, Abu Sita beamed in on Zoom. Here he is. Audio not that good. Bear with it. Hassan Abu Sita's commentary on vicious Israeli weapons, something European governments don't want him to talk about, is way more grim. You'll also hear Dutch anesthesiologist Sarah Galley with Doctors for Gaza. Berber van der Vout, a political scientist, moderates the session.
So what happened once the ground invasion happened is we started to see white phosphorus. First, in the wounded escaping the north, so a 13-year-old boy and his father, I remember when the first phosphorus, and I had seen phosphorus burns in Gaza during the 2009. And then again, we saw it when they started to shell shot the refugee camp, and then as people tried to escape shot it, they fired phosphorus bombs at them. And then you'd see other weapons, and then you don't understand how the injury happens, and then you'd start seeing a pattern. So they were using, and then in retrospect realized that that's what they had used at the Ahli Baptist Hospital. They were using what's called a Hellfire Ninja missile, which is a missile that fragments immediately into discs, metal discs that explode horizontally at the surface and are able to kind of, you know, they're referred to euphemistically as anti-personnel. They create amputations and injuries that are very distinctive. And then eventually you see, you know, when we were towards the end stuck in isolated in an Ahli hospital quadcopter, then the small drones with a sniper gun that they would send to the vicinity of the hospital and sometimes into the grounds of the hospital to shoot at people trying to get into the hospital from outside. And so with each, you know, and because I have had 25 years of experience in as a war surgeon, and because academically, as a researcher, I have an interest in war injuries, you see injuries which don't make sense, and then eventually you see them being repeated, and then you find out about the weapon. And so it's obvious that one of the things that was happening is that there are weapons being tried out, weapons being advertised. We have to understand that one of the aims of a Gaza war for the Israeli weapons industry is to research and advertise weapons production. And we see that with the quadcopters, because if you look at the website of the company called Extend that manufactures quadcopters, it's now using what they call battle-tested products to look for $40 million of dollars in funding to expand the realm of quadcopters as a result of the success that they've had in this field.
So let's have a look at your role, Hassan, in testifying for the ICC case, because, well, the story has been that might have played a role in forces trying to keep you out of the Schengen area. How did you, like, was this? This was probably not the first time you had some issues moving around or speaking up. Can you tell us a little bit about the difficulties you encountered to make your voice heard and move around, please?
So The harassment started while I was still in Gaza, within a few days of me being in Gaza and appearing on some media outlets. The anti-terrorist police came and harassed my family here and asked really uninnocent questions of, you know, asked my wife which room I was in sleeping in Shifa Hospital, in which department, and if she was shown a diagram, would she be able to tell where in Shifa Hospital I am? And then when I came out, there is a kind of, you know, the usual campaign by organizations like UK Lawyers for Israel and by the right-wing press and by pro-Israeli newspapers like the Jewish Chronicle. And then I had an invitation to speak at this Congress in Berlin. I arrived in Berlin and was told by the authorities, both verbally and in writing, that I'm not allowed to go into Germany for the month of April. And this was confirmed by documents that they gave me, and I was sent back from Germany. And then there was the engagement to speak at the French Senate, at the invitation of senators, had been pre-planned, and I went to France really having no idea that there was a Schengen-wide ban. At Charles de Gaulle, I was told by the passport officer that the Germans had put in an administrative Schengen-wide ban for me to enter any country in the Schengen. And because it's an administrative ban, which had been brought in, and I remember it, it had been brought in to manage football hooligans trying to move from one match to the other. They didn't have to inform me. They didn't have to show it to a judge. And that only the German government can remove the ban, but that different governments had the right to create an exception for their own country in defense of their own sovereign. And so by the end of the day, it had become apparent to myself and the French parliamentarian that the French government was not going to create an exception. I then was sent back to London. And then you realize that, and then the issue of traveling to Holland came up, because that was already also pre-planned, and I was supposed to be at the Palestinian embassy on the 15th of March, and then speaking to parliamentarians and speaking to yourselves. I had a meeting with the head of the UN Agency for Chemical Weapons to discuss the use of white phosphorus. And the Dutch foreign ministry informed the Palestine ambassador that they had no intention of lifting the ban, and therefore that was luckily the lawyers in Germany, Alexander Gorski and the European Center for Legal Support, had managed to overturn. You know, the minute the ban was shown to a judge, it was overturned.
Yeah, your testimony, because you have an important voice. You were there in the first days when the destruction started, and you have important testimony about cluster munition, white phosphorus, that is really relevant in turn when it comes to legal proceedings against Israel. What are your expectations?
Oh, this is the campaign will continue. The campaign will continue. Organizations involved in what they call lawfare, like UK Lawyers for Israel, are a continuation of the Israeli security establishment, and they use the courts to try to do everything from have you barred from the Charity Commission from holding any kind of office in a charitable organization, to going after doctors and having their medical licenses revoked. So the battle will continue, because 76 years of total impunity has been shattered. And it's that impunity that intoxicated the Israeli leaders at the beginning of this war to openly verbalize their genocidal intention as set out in the ICJ by the South African team. You know, they have been drunk on that 76 years of total impunity afforded to them by Europe and North America. that they told us that they wanted to wipe out people in Gaza, that they want to ethnically cleanse Gaza, that they want to drop a nuclear bomb on Gaza, that this is the Nakba 2, all of these things that we heard being catalogued by the South African people are as a result of that impunity that now has been shattered. You know, as Palestinians, none of this surprises us. It's just that the world is listening for the first time, and that is what's terrifying Western governments and the pro-Israel lobby within these Western governments. And that's why we saw the brutality in Amsterdam University by the police. We've seen it in by the French police against the student. And that's why 2,200 students in the United States have been in prison, more than when China cracked down on the student movement in Hong Kong, more than any other student revolution in the globe. There have been more students because suddenly that complete control of the narrative has been shattered. And therefore, these powers that have been used to that complete control of the narrative and being able to give Israel its impunity, because we need to understand that the impunity is not intrinsic in Israel because of just the nature of Israel and its history. It's intrinsic for the reasons that the Colombian president said when he voiced his support to the Palestinian people. What is being done to Gaza is a message to people in the southern hemisphere across the globe that if you try to change the rules of engagement, this is what will be done to you. That he said that this is Gaza is being made an example of to frighten the rest of them.
The Arts for Gaza people, the Doctors for Gaza people, I mean, do they like encounter like similar, I mean, this is an extreme case probably of suppression of rights, but how is, do they encounter?
Can I just say, 63 doctors are under investigation by the General Medical Council to have their licenses withdrawn.
In Britain?
This is not, in Britain. This
wow.
is not an extreme case.
No.
A similar process has been happening to junior doctors in the United States and in Canada, where people have been thrown out of their jobs, put on forced administrative leave, just based on just voicing support to Palestinians on social media. It's not, but suddenly the world is seeing it, and that's what makes the difference.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying that. It's incredible, because in the case of Ukraine, I think nobody had a problem with doctors voicing their, how is it in the Netherlands, Sarah?
Well, I think it's especially Ukraine makes it the, because it's so recent, and it was very blatant that for when there was Ukraine, all the medical societies voiced their support. With Ukraine, there were hospitals that showed the flag of Ukraine on their buildings to show their support. And there was this very clear outcry of principle, like we as human beings and as doctors cannot condone this, and we hope for a swift end of these atrocities. And there's this very weird situation where we have a situation that is 40 times worse than Ukraine ever was. I mean, there's really no comparison. And yet, if you just say against genocide, I'm against the attacks on healthcare workers, I'm against the massive killing of children. There's been more children killed than in the last 4 years in the entire world. All the conflicts of the world combined in 4 years is less children dead than now in 7 months in Gaza. I mean, this is really something that we've not seen in our lifetime. And yet we see that there's a lot of pushback, a lot of avoidance, a lot of accusations. We see that very much online, that accusation of, oh, well, do you support Hamas then? Are you anti-Semitic? Just like the classic Pavlov conditioning that's been going on for a while. And it's apparently something very hard to get out from. And I think that people don't realize, and institutions don't realize, that the long-term consequences of not standing up for principles, because what it's showing to the world is it was never about the principle, it's about the people. And when the victims were white and blonde and Christian, we have no problems as doctors taking position. And the same organization that took position for Ukraine say now, well, it's too political, we don't do politics, so we cannot take a position for that. And it very much reminded me of a bit by Trevor Noah that talked about the social contract that we have as a society. And that when the people in power do not respect their own principles, it breaks the social contract and it breaks the fabric of society in a way.
Sarah Galley is a Dutch anesthesiologist and member of the group Doctors for Gaza. You also heard British-Palestinian surgeon Hassan Abu Sita. Abu Sita has visited Gaza on a host of occasions since 2009, most recently following the outbreak of what arguably constitutes genocidal war on the tiny besieged enclave. Read more about Hassan Abu Sita at greenplanetmonitor.net. Fatwa on Hassan Abu Sita has recently been lifted thanks to the efforts of the European Legal Support Center, the ELSC, supports and defends advocates for Palestinian rights across mainland Europe and the UK. Tobias Den Haan is a legal researcher with the center. Here he is at last Friday's Rights Forum gathering in Amsterdam in conversation with moderator Berber van der Vout.
My work is to monitor the repression of Palestine solidarity in these different countries. As you were asking, it can be people losing their jobs for publishing certain tweets. It could be people running into difficulties in their universities, students who maybe speak at protests, or academics who stand in solidarity, then get called into their supervisors to say, you know, to kind of explain why they said certain things or why they published certain tweets, but also very real physical violence to protesters. I think we've all seen, or many of us will have seen, the videos from Amsterdam, from here, but also from the UK, from Germany, from Spain, from Italy also, where the police, you know, is really very violent with people who really, just really want a genocide to end. And of course, there's also artists or people who've been invited to have an exhibition or a panel or have, you know, a certain engagement that is then cancelled for very vague reasons. What you see, especially in Germany, is people getting cancelled for having signed letters in support of BDS. So that is, of course, the boycott, divestment and sanctions movement that is calling for kind of a political isolation of Israel. Very similar to what happened, obviously, with South Africa in the 80s and the 90s. So really, the repression is very broad, and it can happen to very many people. But yeah, it obviously affects different people in different ways, but what you see reproduced in the repression is colonial narratives, and obviously it also interacts with racist sentiments that already exist in society, right? So you can also observe people facing literal deportation orders or their residency being somehow threatened because they were in a certain organization or they stood in solidarity. And yeah, it's a big problem, but we're fighting against it and we're giving people free legal support to do it.
I was wondering if you see a difference in the way and also in the intent, the intensity with which the voices, the actions are being suppressed throughout Europe.
Yeah, I think from this first slide is pretty clear that there is a difference. From now, you know, speaking now in May of 2024. Kind of 8 months after the genocide began, there's definitely a difference, but also what's important to talk about is that the patterns and the things that we're seeing are not new. Rather, that what is new is, I think, an escalation in frequency and intensity of these incidents and kind of I think governments and lobby groups and societal actors who do and who enact the repression, so to say, is broadening their scope, right? Like broadening their scope and yeah, really going very hard. So if we look at the graphs, there are 1,359 incidents that we've recorded since we started our monitoring project, which we started in 2019. And of these incidents, more than 1,000 have been recorded since October, and around 336 have been recorded before that time. And obviously, a big disclaimer, we are just humans, and we're not able to monitor everything. And what's very likely is that there's obviously more out there. There's people who are afraid to speak up, but have maybe suffered repression. And that's very normal because there's a climate of fear, obviously, speaking around Palestine in certain contexts.
Can I ask you something? Did you have the impression that also before the 7th of October, there was a trend that the suppression was going up, that the activities were that they were getting more active, wherever it comes from?
Yeah, that's a bit hard to say, but I would say since 2016-17, we've seen, with the adoption of the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, which defines criticism of Israel, or at least a lot of forms of it, it conflates that with anti-Semitism, and that was then weaponized in a lot of countries to kind of stifle speech and activism on Palestine. And that was then adopted by a lot of countries. It was also going to be adopted by the UN before a lot of human rights organizations said, please, no, that's a bad idea. And then also the passing of anti-BDS motions in countries such as Germany and also the US, where speaking out in support of BDS or signing BDS letters or being a BDS activist was criminalized. And these were just policies, you know, politicians telling themselves, we think this is bad. But it's not law, but it's used as law, right? And that's what's scary. So,
how do you register the incidents? Do people self-report? Do you follow the media and do the, or is it a combination of both?
Many people report the incidents to us through our website, our kind of social media channels, or a hotline in Germany. We have a hotline phone number, and also at the same time we obviously look at news articles, we look at social media, and try to really see what's going on in the world and what kind of laws are being enacted. This, for example, is Germany. And here you see a breakdown of all the different incident types, because we record, obviously, incident per type. There's smear campaigns, which are a huge thing in Germany, where, for example, a lobby group starts a smear campaign by going to the right-wing press, like tabloid press. And then that gets picked up by the press, and that creates a storm, and then also politicians mingle in and say their things about it. And that, paired with what we call threat of legal action, is a huge topic in Germany where say police arrests you for something, for having said, for example, from the river to the sea, or stop the genocide, or things of the sort. And then you get a letter from the police, and then you have to, come to the station, or you get charged with incitement to hatred, and then you have to go to court. I just want to pause here and say that I'm very aware that these things are quite, real and quite heavy, and people who face these legal troubles, it's not easy for them, especially for people who are financially maybe more vulnerable or racially, racialized by, these European states. But we've also seen, since October, so many people standing in solidarity with us, and also just legal victories, because we believe that so much of the repression is not rooted in law. It's very often rooted in fiction, lobbying, and colonial silencing of people who want human rights abuses to stop. And for example, with Hassan Abusita, we were able to overturn his ban in Germany, and we were also able to, in certain parts of Germany, to get the From the River to the Sea slogan decriminalized, but also in the UK, we're supporting students who face deportation charges. academics and doctors who are facing, you know, disciplinary investigations and actions. So I also want to emphasize that, you know, we're also winning and fighting back.